All stations, all stations, all call signs. This is Wrecker Actual, over. Stand by for transmission. Prepare to copy. This is American Vindicta.
Vindicta, I'm your host, Doug Thornton. And today we have a special guest with us, and his name's Steve Quill. Before we bring Steve on, we're going to try and get all of our paid advertisement out of the way so that we have just a straight amount of time to talk, because Steve has so much great information. This man has done decades worth of research, and I think it is very pertinent for you, the listener, to be able to hear another side of the story of the Nazi Empire. Once again, this whole goal is to not let any stone be left unturned, and we are going to go into some dark and creepy stuff here with Steve, and Steve is really going to shine the light on what mainstream history is not going to tell you. So real fast, I want you to be able to visit Ready Made Resources with Bob Griswold. Prepare yourself and your family. Give Bob a call and get some good products from him. We also have My Patriot Supply. If you're needing to get any food or any water purification, please visit My Patriot Supply. And once again, please visit stevequail.com. If you're needing gold and silver, or you're needing to allocate other resources in that physical possession of gold and silver, because we have a failing economy right now, please visit stevequill.com. He also has a plethora of books on there and some amazing videos that this man has done. I mean, it is Hollywood-grade movies, and please check out his website. He always has great information on there, really good articles, and other different things on there. So please check out stevequill.com. Steve, my brother, it has been a long time in the making for me and you to do this, and I am shaking excited. I can't believe we're finally doing this. Steve, I'm going to bring you on, and I want you just to tell us what it is that you know, starting with Empire Under the Ice.
Well, first of all, it's Empire Beneath the Ice. And just to put it into the context, how the Nazis won World War II. We have the false history, Doug, of just what the main people who have been recording history according to controlling a narrative that's totally false. 1947, Admiral Byrd takes basically a naval task force into Antarctica to search out and seek out the Nazi bases, both above the ice, but also, more importantly, beneath the ice. Now, Admiral Byrd is interesting because Admiral Byrd, in his diaries, talked about literally going into an opening in the North Pole and meeting the king of the world. I want people to understand that. That is a recorded conversation. Those days, they didn't have the Department of Lies. They did have intelligence. And basically, Doug, what people don't understand, and this is what is really critical today, is that all the advanced weapons, spacecraft, biological cloning, all that stuff came through the Nazis, and it came through under Operation High Jump. By the way, there are four other programs too, but Operation High Jump was a bringing in after World War II officially ended, and actually during the ability of the Allies to identify some of the top scientists, bringing them into the United States, giving them new identities, and basically getting from the scientists, Dr. Wernher von Braun is one, Hermann Oberth, two of the most famous missile science and rocket science in the world, which, by the way, obviously anybody who knows the history of NASA knows that, you know, Dr. Wernher von Braun he's called the father of modern rocketry, but that's really a misnomer. Not that he isn't that, but it's what Dr. Wernher von Braun knew and that Hermann Oberth knew, and they both made this statement. It's not that we Germans were smarter than the scientists in the West, but we had help from the other side. Now, the other side is a euphemism or a term that was used from the spirit world. And there were known occultists. Some of the most powerful occultists of the day were in Germany, and they were known for their seances and their advanced techniques of contacting the spirit world. If we continue in with the narrative, this is in my book, Empire Beneath the Ice, how the Nazis won World War II. They were literally recording sessions when the clairvoyants would give birth, and you're going to hear me right, to adult entities, ectoplasmic, you know, a bunch of goo with a lot of knowledge that they really wanted to get. And those ectoplasmic, I would guess, bursts, I'm trying to think of the word, you know, energies, would basically dictate the advanced physics and give them knowledge of the future. And so in essence, they weren't looking at Ouija boards. They weren't just looking at the stars. They were listening to evil spirits. And unless someone understands the whole basis of, oh, all of the, if you will, the delving into the occult by the Nazi high command, like Heinrich Himmler, they you know, there's conflicting numbers, but he had one of the largest occult libraries in history. There's two different libraries. There was 40,000 volumes of just everything from witchcraft, do you name it, 40,000. And then to the latest finding is 8,000 volumes on the history of Masons, like in Freemasonry, and all the stuff associated with that. So when I make the statement, and I get challenged on it all the time, which, you know, people are welcome to, but you cannot separate the occult from the Nazi war machine. And a lot of the advances, for instance, you've been in the military. I was told by a four-star general that the opening scene to Hellboy is that based on the dictations of evil spirits and the Nazis, they were able to open a stargate. And that's the opening scene in the movie Hellboy. I don't recommend anybody watches, but those of you who have seen it, that's what that's referring to. So the Nazis had the idea that there was a super race on Earth. They called them the Hyperboreans, the Atlanteans. They called them whatever, but they were the Ubermen, the supermen, those who were something other than human. So the Nazis were pursuing transhumanism from the very beginning of their rise to power. But Doug, what's interesting is because there were many volumes of what I would call occult, and occult in the true sense of the word just means hidden from the general public or occluded. In other words, there's something there, but you don't know what quite is. So from those writings, they built pretty much a racially segregated society that was seeking to restore, if you will, the race of the Hyperboreans, which were the perfect man. And so when Nietzsche wrote about the Übermensch and the Nazi Party kept repeating that, they were looking to become those, if you will, Aryan warriors from antiquity. Now, what's interesting, that's the biggest lie in the Garden of Eden when Satan, misled Eve, and then she in turn Adam, that in the day that you eat of the knowledge of the tree of the fruit of good and evil, you're going to be like God. You're going to know good and evil. That was something God never intended for Adam and Eve. And people say, I don't believe in Adam and Eve. Well, you got to understand something, that Adam and Eve go back 6,000, maybe a couple of 6,500 years, but we're talking about intelligent civilizations that were on the earth before Adam and Eve were created, that were not human and not creating the image and likeness of God. Someone would say, was that the angel and the golden age of fallen angels? Yes. So I want people to understand something. You know, and Doug, you can grab the book, but there are enough footnotes in that book to back up everything I'm saying. Now, one of the things people don't understand, towards the close of World War II, Reich Admiral, Donitz, D-O-N-I-T-Z, and some people pronounce it with the umlauts, Dernitz, told the world they weren't yet ready to accept or receive the secrets that the Nazis had basically come across. And his great-grandson called me after I think I did a coast-to-coast one time talking about this, and told me, you're the only one that's ever accurately represented what my great-great-grandfather was trying to tell everyone. And so I did have contact. Now, I also, God bless Jamie Walden, Jamie got me some copies of pages from someone who was an airman on an aircraft carrier during Operation High Jump. And in the back of this gentleman's journal or log, he absolutely noted the different men who were lost fighting in their aircraft. He didn't talk about the Nazis, but those five names show up in the history of Operation High Jump as those who were flying the aircraft that the Nazi flying saucers took out of the air. So, ladies and gentlemen, the Nazis had advanced technology that was not of this earth. So you fast forward to the Empire Beneath the Ice, and in essence, people have got to understand that those who have been there to Antarctica, that understand that there's 100 volcanoes in the immediate area underneath the continent of Antarctica and off the ocean surrounding it, there's so much going on in Antarctica because the majority of off-the-chart energy is broadcast from what I've been told is the ultimate energy initiator on planet Earth. And it was put there and maintained by fallen angels. Now, the Bible teaches that one-third of the angels in heaven fell. I have no population account for how many angels were in heaven that fell. You know, it's kind of like arguing, how many angels can you fit on the head of a pin? Well, the answer is none. They're smarter than that. They're bigger than that. So people have a really dumb understanding of angels. Angel means messenger. And the Bible is very clear that angels, it's scripture says, the Holy Bible says, he maketh his angels ministering spirits as angels of fire, or ministering spirits of fire. The point is that they were created out of a different, you know, we're created out of dirt, you know, ashes to ashes, dust to dust. And when God takes dirt, he blows into it his Holy Spirit. We became a living, cognizant, reasoning, ability to communicate with our Creator. In other words, God made Adam incredibly smart at the beginning. Unfortunately, they didn't evidently understand the concept. When God said no, he means no. And most Christians today don't understand that concept either, in my opinion. Go ahead. Let me take a drink of water and you can fill in the blanks.
Well, Steve, I have a question for you, okay? When it comes to Antarctica, so I'm going to give the audience a little bit of facts about Antarctica to back up some of these claims, especially about a unknown energy source. And this is something that was documented by Commander David E. Bungner, who was a part of the expedition for Admiral Byrd. And he would discover a 300-mile-wide oasis that was made up of freshwater lakes near the Shackleton ice shelf. And it was 300 square miles worth. And it was just started in rich brown mountains, which they discovered to be pure mountains of coal. Admiral Byrd even said that there was so much coal that was discovered in Antarctica that it could fuel the world's need for coal resources for 200 to 300 years. Now, along with all this, whenever they landed, they landed in a 5-mile-long lake. And in that lake, they took some water samples, they took some soil samples, and they discovered that the water was fresh water. It was warm. It was about 38 to 39 degrees Fahrenheit, so it's not within the area of being able to be frozen. But still, it was warm compared to the ice shelf that was surrounding it. Now, all this area was free of ice and snow. And on the shores of the lake were these vast deposits of coal, but they also found traces of uranium there. Now, with all the mineral deposits that are there, I mean, Antarctica is – it's thousands and thousands of miles of unexplored area that is extremely harsh. And back then with Admiral Byrd, before the advancements of the diesel engines and all that, everything was done with dog sleds. And it took – you know, decades just to explore a couple hundred miles. But by the time Admiral Byrd got there and through the Operation High Jump, he was able to transfer a lot of machinery to get in and out of these areas. And, you know, you can watch some of the videos. You can find them on YouTube, Operation High Jump, where they actually have the old military documents of the videos. And Admiral Byrd's quoted saying that he saw things that would look like an oasis. He saw creatures that sound like a woolly mammoth. He saw large cavernous openings where at some point he even talked about seeing craft that were coming in and out of it. Steve, if the Nazis went there back in the mid-30s, whenever their expedition to New Schwabenland originally started, we know that their U-boats would reach there. And we know that by 1945, two U-boats would show up on the shore of Patagonia, which purportedly had Hitler and Eva Braun and Boring on there. But here's what's interesting, Steve, and this is one of those things where I think it's one of those big cover-ups. It's because when these two U-boats showed up, they were detained and by the military, and then they were questioned by the U.S. military and the U.K. military, and everyone on these U-boats were then released. I mean, what kind of a story is that? These are Nazi war criminals that are escaping to other countries in U-boats, and they were released. Now, this is the interesting thing. I think, and I'm sure you maybe could back me up on this, I think the Nazis were able to use the advanced technology of their U-boats that can stay underwater for a very long time, running off of batteries and a large snorkel that they would then use to turn on the diesel engine, which would, you know, restart all the cycles of the batteries and recharge them. They were able to get to Antarctica. They were able to find places to hide where supposedly there are the ports, and I'm going to let you go into that. But I think they probably had more of a fleet get into Antarctica to hide themselves there. But, Steve, where could they have gone once they got there?
Well, first of all, Antarctica is a huge continent, Doug. And from the people that I know that have been there, and by the way, on the different websites that you can look at, and FYI, I'm preparing a special Antarctic report from a couple of the most knowledgeable sources I know on the planet that will be available only to the people that sign up for what are called my private briefings. I have to do this because there's too much detail. I can't do it in a podcast. And you can go to Gen6, G-E-N-S-I-X.com, to sign up for that. And it's really critical that people understand that Antarctica, beneath the ice. Now, keep in mind, I said at the beginning of this, Admiral Byrd was debriefed by the intelligence agencies, and he said he met the most shining being, and he called him the king of the world. Upon further questioning, some of this stuff is, you know, kind of alluded to, but very, very much of it is still classified. And even with the classification, Doug, the intelligence agencies that debriefed him, and remember, this is like in, oh, good night, it is the early 40s, even maybe a little bit later than that. And they asked him point blank, did the king of the world identify himself to you? And this is what flipped out the intelligence and military people. He said, yes. He said he was Lucifer. And you're hearing me correctly, the king of the world. Now, ladies and gentlemen, those of you familiar with the New Testament know that Jesus was taken up under the top of a temple. And Satan said, all these kingdoms I will give to you if you but fall down and worship me. Now, this was before the crucifixion and resurrection of Jesus, but Jesus rebuked him. But notice, Jesus didn't argue with him that he had the authority. So, Doug, what I'm saying is empire under the ice, beneath the ice, there's so much to deal with. Now, again, because it's volcanic, even, ladies and gentlemen, H.G. Wells and some of the science fiction writers of the day, who were also in secret societies, had access to a lot of information. And when I talk about F.A., F as in Frank, A as in Alpha, I'm talking about fallen angels. Now, when I say fallen angels, I'm not talking about cherubs that go on a mantle during the holidays. I'm not talking about what most people think as some kind of an amorphous goo that can speak to whoever, speak to me or speak to you. No, I'm talking about mighty warrior angels who God created, and one third of the angels fell from heaven. So the question I get, Doug, is, well, how many angels are that? And the answer I give to everybody, I don't know. But what I would say is one third of the angels is a lot of angels. And so the fallen angels and the legions of fallen angels, the legions of thousand fallen angels, are absolutely controlling the world right now. And Jesus said the whole world lies in evil one. So why is this critical now? Empire beneath the ice, how the Nazis won World War II, because Lucifer is the god of this world, little g. And he came into an agreement with the Nazis that, in essence, and remember, the Nazis were occultists. They weren't, white Anglo-Saxon Protestant Lutherans, okay? They came from every, basically, when I say occult and secret society that existed in history and passed down their, their dogmas to the adherents or the initiates, that's a better word. So they were in the correct mindset to accept Lucifer as God. And because to the Nazis and to a lot of people, they thought the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and the father of our Lord Jesus Christ was basically just somebody that, you know, basically wound the universe up and stepped out to lunch. They did not, they did not respect Christianity. But the thing was interesting, you know this, from the Anunnaki. The Anunnaki, you know, is the ancient ones. Hitler sent teams of archaeologists, anthropologists, and different scientists around the world, and they were looking for this race of supermen, Übermensch. Again, they used the Anunnaki. Well, they rejected Jesus Christ and the God of the Bible. They were looking for things like the Spear of Longinus. The Spear of Longinus. Longinus was the Roman centurion at the crucifixion that put his spear tip into the side of Jesus. That's what that is. It's also called the Spear of Destiny. Then they also were looking for the Grail, okay? That's the chalice that Jesus and his disciples drank wine out of at the Last Supper. They were also looking for the Ark of the Covenant, which is a basis of Indiana Jones and the very first movie that Steven Spielberg did with Indiana Jones and the whole subject. That was the Ark. But they were looking for other things, Doug. They were looking for the offspring of the gods. In other words, the genetic offspring of the gods. And people don't understand this, but Dr. Mengele, who fled to Argentina and basically pretty much moved around South America as he wanted, he had a village that was basically filled with nothing but twins. Mm-hmm. And so he's given the credit for being one of the first guys who understood the procedure of human cloning. Obviously, twinning is a very preparatory stage in that. And so the entire, if you will, ability to live underneath the ice and to be heated and to have, you know, an inner sun. And sometimes you'll hear people talk about the black, B-L-A-C-K, sun. So, and that goes into the inner earth, hollow earth, and all of that stuff. Now we know, and this is what gets interesting, we know from Bird's diary that he was told to shut up. After Bird was, after Operation High Jump, Bird was kind of put away and told never talk to the press. Now the first Secretary of Defense that we had in the United States, his name escapes me right now, but the guy that was thrown out of the third story of Bethesda, Forrestal, James Forrestal. Forrestal wanted to tell the public about what they had found. Forrestal wanted to come clean with all of the UFO technology they found. And by the way, ladies and gentlemen, the Nazis really did have flying saucers. They truly did. And interestingly enough, Doug, a couple of those flying saucers had some of the most ancient and archaic symbols known to mankind.
Yeah, and Steve, that reminds me of there was a project that the Nazis were working on in the 1930s. And it was the German VTOL, VTOL, and we had talked about this on yesterday's podcast. But it's a very interesting concept, and it's more or less like a box fan turned upside down. And it had two propellers on the inside of it. It was a circular object, but they also had winged planes that looked very much like the TR-3B that we hear so much about. And they had, at that point in time, where they were working on anti-gravity weapons, anti-gravity repulsors, different kinds of rocket engines, different types of jet fusion engines, things that were, you know, decades in the making in any other country. And one of the things that historians argue about but can seem to agree on is that if the Nazis were able to refinance themselves into the investment of their weaponry and into their technology, that there would be a possibility that the Allied forces would not have been able to invade Europe and commence Operation D-Day and a bunch of other things successfully, because the weapons, when they were rolled out, were considered to be, I guess you could say, too new to know all the different problems that they would have had. But there were definitely weapons there, Steve, that they had outside influence. They had some sort of outside help, because the mathematics were not there in any other military in the world at that point in time for creating some of these weapons, especially the jet propulsion and the lifting engines. And what we know is that General Byrd, Admiral Byrd and his fleet had come underneath some sort of a attack by some sort of a craft. Now, the World War II fighters called them the Foo Fighters, but we also had members of the Axis military from Japan and Germany who also witnessed these strange craft. Now, when the Allied powers were invading into Europe, they were being chased and harassed by these strange aircraft that were shiny. They were spherical shape. They were conical shaped. Some of them were shaped like disc. And I mean, there are real reports that the United States Army Air Force at that point in time were recording. And they even had German scientists and German airplane fighters who even said the exact same thing. We were seeing craft that, you know, they thought was ours, and we didn't know who they were. But we know that they did somehow accompany the Nazi fleet, the Nazi naval fleet of U-boats, into New Schwabenland. And they did end up somehow getting into some sort of a dogfight with Admiral Byrd's fleet. But Steve, why is it not really talked about? Why does it seem like it's being hidden from history? What is the significance of trying to hide it?
Because I have an answer for you. Because number one, the U.S. did not want the advanced technology that they had acquired by an agreement. There's a treaty between the United States government and the Nazi Empire that pretty much was in existence below and below the ice. For instance, Doug, we know that Yamato Mountain in the Urals, that is Russia's doomsday bunker, is 400 square miles. What's under Antarctica is staggering in its ability. So why would they cover this up? Simple. By controlling the narrative, they didn't want the advanced craft that they came into possession of, they meaning U.S. government, they didn't want it falling into the hands of the Russians. But they didn't know that the Russians had spies on board a couple of the ships that were involved in Operation High Jump, who actually filmed the UFOs. And by the way, there used to be, I don't know if it's still there, someone told me it was taken down, but there used to be a Russian documentary, obviously spoken in Russian, but with U.S. Subtitles, that cataloged this better than anybody else. So Russia did end up with the advanced designs. Now, a lot of people don't understand that there was also an interesting aircraft design known as the Horten, H-O-R-T-E-N. And if you saw it today, you would swear it is the foundational design for the B-2, the the B-1, B-2 bombers, and some of the stealth aircraft. And that was in 1950. And this was so far in advance that most people just couldn't embrace it. Now, again, what's critical is the Nazi Flying Bell and some of the other, if you will, UFOs. I mean, you can see the pictures. By the way, those are real, and people just don't want to admit it. But here's the key. The United States thought by entering into agreement with the Empire Beneath the Ice, that was the, if you will, the breakaway Nazi government, all the technology, the state-of-the-art technology, scientists, and raw materials were pretty much taken to the Antarctic, not just on U-boats. For the record, both the Nazis and the Japanese had aircraft-carrying submarines. Now, whether the Nazis ever got them or not, they claim that Japan's, now you hear what I'm saying, in essence, an underwater aircraft carrier. So, the advances that were made when the Nazis sent all of their scientists and their search teams all over the world into the Himalayas, et cetera, to the jungles of the Amazon, they were interested in the same thing U.S. Special Ops is interested in today. I mean, literally today. They wanted advanced technology, advanced propulsion systems, advanced weapon systems, and they were looking for, if you will, the location of the different stargates upon planet Earth. And the Nazis were the first to open a stargate.
Now, what's interesting, Steve, is people may think what you're saying right now is completely ridiculous, made up, theoretical sci-fi nonsense. But what is interesting about history, ladies and gentlemen, is that you just don't know very much of it anymore because it's not talked about. It's not that it's your fault, but we as a society have been made ignorant of history. In the late 1800s to the 1900s, you had societies like the Vril Society or the Thule Society. Now, both the Vril Society came first. Both of them were in part a cult-based society that were looking for Atlantis, that they had contacts with people that were from Atlantis. And I know that sounds really crazy, but that's what the German OKF, the high command, believed. The German Wehrmacht funded expeditions. And this is Heimlich Himmler and the SS, which is everything occult that you could ever dream of. And these guys funded expeditions. They funded archaeology. But one of the big things that they did was they were attempting to rewrite the history of the German people, not rewrite the history of the world. What the SS wanted to do through the ears of occultism was spread the message that the original sources of power of the world came from the Germanic people and that the Nazi SS had found them and that the Aryans and the Tall Whites and all these other groups that are affiliated with it spread throughout the world thousands of years ago through some sort of a cataclysm of a flood, and that's why they sent teams to Tibet. They sent teams of archaeologists and scientists to Tibet, where they said that the Tibetan monks were actually long-lost cousins, more or less, of the Aryan people. And they were actually taking measurements of their skulls and their hands and all different types of scientific methods. And they began to create this methodology of how to check to see if you were Aryan enough or not, which is one of the things that also helped lead to the Holocaust. Now, people don't understand that when you speak about Nazism, occultism is right next to it. You cannot have Nazis without occults. And it's carried throughout society today. The same sort of occultism that we've seen in Nazi Germany was there before Nazi Germany. It was there during the Weimar Republic. It was there during World War I. It was there in the 1800s. These are things that really got brought up for a long time. Friedrich Nietzsche talked about it with the Übermensch. Even though he was really against the Nazis to a certain extent, he ended up more or less helping out with the ideology of the Nazis because he was the one who helped create the idea of the super soldier. But unlike what Joseph Stalin did with actually trying to fund research to create a super soldier, the Nazis went the completely other route and went the esoteric route. And Steve, you can really speak on this with the Nazi Temple of Doom. I think the SS Castle is probably one of the strangest anomalies you can ever even breach when it comes to speaking about military history. It was literally the resurrection of the Templar Knights. This is the way Himmler would talk about it. And he believed that he was the long-lost descendant of a former Germanic king, and they would commit seances inside the castle. And they would also, occasionally cut off the heads of Nazi officers and put them on the pedestals, and they would have their seances in the middle. And Steve, why is it that they focus so much on bringing this level of occultism, breaching these different dimensions and reaching through for this hidden information when they had technological feats through their scientists that were already going above and beyond anybody else? What was the need for the supernatural to help the Nazi army? What was the need for it?
Well, the need for it, Doug, is that they need an external look. You can only go so far in modern physics, but there's a whole area of, quote, alien. I don't mean illegals crossing the border. There's a whole, if you will, a cadre of alien designs. Like, for instance, Diglock, D-I-E-G-L-O-C-K-E. You know, Hitler's anti-gravity machine. Well, Hitler was sending his troops to India, the Himalayas. Actually, his honorary crew, but they had troops. And what you're saying is true. I mean, they beheaded so many of the people in some of the upper countries like Bhutan and different, you know, of the highest known civilizations, meaning altitude-wise, and they were looking for the third eye. And the third eye was the occult equivalent, of, if you will, of the ability to look into the future. So yeah, go ahead.
Real quick, I'm gonna answer something and let you get back onto it. One of the Nazi scientists that were tried and hung was actually quoted for having an entire room dedicated to skulls of victims from various different countries and from the concentration camps itself. And he was a collector of skulls, and he would have the SS literally decapitate people and bring him the heads so that he could study them. And it then, you know, obviously it went into some black magic esoteric stuff. But I just wanted to insert that that is documented from the Nuremberg trials. And one of the SS scientists was actually killed from the Nuremberg trials because of what Steve just said. Continue, Steve.
Well, first of all, that's true. And ladies and gentlemen, there's no difference. The Nazis experimented at length, especially Joseph Mengele, Dr. Death. And Mengele was looking, Doug, for everybody that had any genetic anomaly. He was fascinated by midgets, okay? And that's the word they use. Well, we would call them little people. He was fascinated by twins, specifically twins. Now, that plays an important part in the early 50s because he had fled to Argentina, and there's a whole village that he experimented on that has the highest rate of twins in the world. And it's, you know, on the Argentine border with, whoever Argentina borders right now, Brazil. The thing is, I think I'm right on that, Brazil. But the point, that's actually the name of a movie about that called The Boys from Brazil. And I think Gregory Peck played, the evil scientist. I'm pretty sure, going back in time for me. But the point being is one of the most interesting things, ladies and gentlemen, is on the Diglock. I'm not talking Diglock pistol, which is interesting in itself, but Diglock, the anti-gravity machine, or what some people call the flying bell, B-E-L-L-L, are the glyphs, are the symbols around the rim. And those symbols around the rim, for the record, have been translated. And Doug, this is an important point. My project that I've been working on for, you know, good night, 2 years, 2.5 years now, with my guy, Jesse G, who's in South America or Mexico or Latin America at different times, and all of the alien Aztec artifacts and the alien Egyptian artifacts, the flying saucers play such a major role. Now, obviously, you look at the Aztec Empire, what, about maybe 700 years ago? But when you're talking about the Egyptian Empire, and by the way, ladies and gentlemen, these were found in Mexico, and every place you see on some of these big panels are like 4x8 sheets of plywood and weigh several thousand pounds, the details, what I call them is the history panels, or what one of them is known as the Nephilim stone. And Doug, all of the different panels show basically aliens. And I think to date we're at 50 or 60 different species of aliens that are detailed on the panels. Now, ladies and gentlemen, why is this important? Because again, I am on record as stating that artificial intelligence is not artificial whatsoever. I believe alien implants are what the first introduction, for whatever reason, in the middle 50s, 1950s, that were utilized to basically combine alien high technology and human genetics to have a mechanism for taking over, if you will, making humans into more robots by the implant of the little device in the people's back of their neck. And, you know, obviously there's a lot of stuff on alien implants, but Doug, getting back to the symbols, I don't have it right handy, but our team, which is a lot of people in a lot of countries, have taken every known symbol and every known language, like Chinese. There's 126,000 Chinese characters, and for, you know, 18 months been running them through the computers, supercomputers, which I don't own, but they have access to them worldwide, and coming up with an alphabet that can determine. Now, the alphabet isn't like, you know, A, B, C, D, E, F, G, but it's an alphabet of symbols, and each symbol has a meaning, and each meaning has a cross-reference, and each cross-reference has a context. So to make this a very bottom line, get to the end of it right now, I'm going to be presenting that on our findings on Doug Hagman's. We're going to do a fundraiser, I think it's next Thursday and Friday. You can go to Doug's website, and I'm going to show people some stuff that will blow their minds. And what's critical about this is because we know in the last days, the alien deception will become the predominant, if you will, take the heart of God's people away. They're going to declare that we were created by aliens, the Prometheus theme, and that they're coming back to save us from ourselves. Well, my question from the beginning when I wrote my first book on this called Aliens and Fallen Angels, The Sexual Corruption of the Human Race, if these guys are so advanced, why do they want to come have hanky-panky with U.S. women, and not just U.S., but Earth women? And believe it or not, you know, that is a process detailed both in history and prehistory. My definition of prehistory is prior to the creation of Adam and Eve 6,000 years ago, there was civilizations on Earth that must have been angelic and that God ended up destroying because of their sin. And somebody said, were there good angels or bad angels? I don't know some of those answers, but I can tell you this, the Sumerian Table of Kings, and Sumerians are one of the most acknowledged oldest groups of people on the planet. And they had clay tablets, and they had clay symbols. But the Sumerian Table of Kings, you can look it up, goes back, at least the one, I think it's in the British Museum, goes back almost 462,000 years, with some kings ruling for 20,000 years. I got news for you. There's nobody in Adam and Eve Forward's history that ruled for 24,000 years. So the purpose of the glyptionary was to be able to decode a lot of the occult symbols. Now, the symbols, this is critical. Symbols are used to convey meaning, and secret symbols cover the secret meaning that only the adepts, meaning those who have been brought into that world of secrecy, or the occult, meaning hidden, to the rest of the world. That's what gives them their superiority. We know how it's all done. But they don't, because Satan has been a deceiver all along the way. So getting back to the empire beneath the ice, the Nazis made a deal with Lucifer himself. Lucifer is not what people think of when they think of the Baphomet, or all the pictures where he's got a red face and horns. And, you know, I mean, there are times when God strips him of his, if you will, his, it's almost like, if you will, glorious camouflage, but it's not God's glory anymore. Because remember, ladies and gentlemen, the Bible teaches that Lucifer was the brightest shining cherub ever created. He was designed, God said, pipes were built into him, musical instruments were built into him to orchestrate and to initiate the worship of God through music. So what's really interesting here, Doug, is a lot of the stargates, and this is out of Nazi technology too, they work on frequency, sound frequency. They work on specific symbols. The Native American shamans or medicine doctors or medicine men, some of those guys are given the understanding from their forefathers or their immediate fathers. If they're a shaman or a medicine man, they are given information on how to open the stargates. And that's a theme that is through history, pretty much every place and everywhere. And so Stargaze is not just a movie, by the way. I love that movie. With, you know, Kurt Russell and James Spader and I forget who some of the other people are. But the point is important that Hollywood always telegraphs what they're going to do. And by putting it into science fiction, they take away the people, oh, that's just science fiction. For instance, right. The implants that we're watching right now, people are, you know, the vaccine passports are going to have an implant, blah, blah, blah. That first showed up in movies in Hollywood in 1955.
Yeah, that technology has been around for a long time. And Steve, a lot of the technology that you're talking about has been around for quite a long time. Nazi Germany had a big bite out of that cake. They, you know, they had a lot of this technology that was brought to the forefront. But Steve, you hit something a while ago that really gets into something that I would love to talk about. The Great Deception. When we are talking about Nazi Germany and we're talking about Operation Paperclip and bringing the Nazis over here, we're talking about Operation High Jump, where we rediscovered the Nazis in New Schwabenland and we actually still got into some sort of a naval contest with them. And, you know, the hiding of the Nazis throughout South America, we know that, you know, between Brazil, Chile, Argentina, the SS was very prominent. The Nazi regime was very prominent. It was actually very well liked there. It was part of the most successful political groups during that time of the age. And we know that Nazis still created many new marvels and creations in America when they were transferred over here. But we know that, as the Bible tells us, there's going to be an element of great deception in the future. And Steve is one of the foremost prominent experts out there who can tell you about Operation Bluebeam. One of the things that, you know, the government does not want you to know about, and if anything, they want to make kid-related movies like Men in Black and Independence Day that will try and hide all these things from you. But if, Steve, if the government is trying to hide it, if Hollywood is helping in trying to hide it, why did the military actually have projects like Operation Blue Book, where they were trying to hide the UFO sightings, where the OSS was going around and they were interviewing farmers, they were interviewing people that were in the military, fighter pilots, airline pilots, and by the time that they got done interviewing them, they always said the same thing. You didn't see what you saw. Don't say anything else. And they would threaten them with their lives.
Absolutely. And some people were murdered, Doug. And here's the deal. I want people to consider this word. And every time you are asked, or you like Doug's asking me the question, why did the U.S. Air Force undertake Project Blue Book with J. Allen Hynek? The thing is that they wanted to contain any instances of contact, okay, close encounters. They wanted to basically be able to threaten anybody who had an indisputable encounter with aliens or spacecraft. It was all, Doug, about containment, okay? In essence, they wanted to imprison the people. They wanted to either scare them, threaten them, or buy them off, just say nothing. And the reason being, because all that advanced technology, here's the bottom line. I love that statement. I've overused it for 26 years on talk radio. At the end of a day, all advanced technology, to quote Arthur Clarke, would seem like witchcraft to someone who's less knowledgeable technologically. Arthur Clarke also wrote the book Childhood's End, in which aliens show up and everybody thinks they're wonderful and great. And when they're unmasked, it basically is Satan himself and hideous creatures. So the devil's great, and I mean this, at deceiving. That's his key power, is to deceive. And when you deceive someone, you give them what they want. You promise them what they can't have. You give them a little bit of what you promise they can't have. And then you ensnare them. Usually the ensnaring is something involving sodomy. It's something involving child sacrifice, human sacrifice. And while people think this is off base, even lately, there are people calling for humans to be turned into fertilizer, and they're nice and call us goo. And for the record, Doug, in 1973, Charlton Heston and Edgar G. Robinson, the movie called Soylent Green, takes place and what's going on today. And they said 1973, 49 years ago? Yeah, 49 years ago, that this would all take place in 2022. Now you have DARPA, Defense Advanced Research Project Agency, saying, well, we got to get used to eating stuff. And they're talking about, quote, biomass. That's, mm-hmm. Aunt Sally and Uncle George. Because in the movie, this is important. I want everybody to hear this. This is a tactical playbook of what the globalists are going to plan to do with dead bodies. Because, you can't use all that wood to make coffins. Blah, blah, blah. So why not turn people into a food source? There's even people that are recommending you bury humans as a perpetual source of fertilizer in tree trunks.
That's right. There's a, I can't remember, I was reading an article about it just the other day. There is an American city that actually takes the people from the morgue and more or less melts their body down and then flushes the body back into the waste facility. And then the human remains, and this is in America going on right now, the human remains are then used to help with fertilizing crops. We're already there. Soylent Green, the little green potato chip looking things, they said Soylent Green is people. And we're seeing already that the weather is screwing up everything from the growing seasons, and we've talked about mass die-offs before of all the different insects and wildlife and fish that are in the ocean. And what's interesting is that around the world, people within these governments, especially in Europe, are saying we should get used to eating grubs and eating fungus and eating all this other nasty type of crap. But they're wanting you to get away from good, wholesome food. They're wanting you to do anything in their power to have food from the government, because only the government can provide you the safety and the security and the food to consume. This is just one more of the steps of people needing to climb to open their eyes to see that there is a coming great deception, and we are being set up for it. Steve, if World War III were to start, and
Doug, in the next 24 to 48 hours, according to the Russian ultimatum that was just given, and today is January 19th. Does this program play in real time? Do you release it?
Yeah, it'll be playing tonight.
Okay, so as you and I are recording this to be played tonight, the Russians just gave their final warning. Now, why is this critical, ladies and gentlemen? Because that's how close we can be to everything changing. And you've heard me say this, Doug. When I started on talk radio, and this is important for your listeners to understand, nobody else was talking about cannibalism filling the headlines of the day along with the world's biggest volcanoes. And I'm going to tell you that in talking to scientists in the last 24 hours, the event that took place in Tonga had nothing to do with a normal volcanic explosion. I want to say this. That sound was based on technology that the Russians perfected and have in their hands. And, Russia had a 100-megaton nuclear weapon called the Tsar Bomba. And since that time in the 50s, when that thing was exploded, 50s or 60s, they've come up with 300-megaton bombs. But they're not carried in the bomb doors of a Tupolev bomber, Russian bomber, or Blackjack. They're carried in the special submarines and deposited them on the ocean floor or on the ocean shelf. There were three actual explosions. I don't know if people remember that. But there were three, if you will, gravitron waves. The only way you can create a gravitron wave is with a nuclear explosion, okay, of that magnitude. And it went three times around the world, but there were instantaneous, within microseconds, there were three distinct blasts. It was heard to us, as you told me, it was heard in Australia, but it was more importantly, it was heard in Alaska. The last time that happened was in 1883 with Krakatoa. Now, I monitor volcanoes, but I said at the start of my radio, I guess you'd say career or whatever, I started it and I said, before Jesus comes, you will see cannibalism in the headlines, and also you'll see the major volcano of the world going off simultaneously with cannibalism in the headlines. Now, nobody could put those two things together, and I don't take credit for it. I want everybody to hear that, because I function on the fact that there's no way to see the headlines of the future unless you're making them happen or unless you're God. So the other thing I think people need to understand is when nations come under divine judgment, if you want to see what happened to the nation of Israel, they were literally chopping up their kids and eating them. And they were doing everything from trying to find pigeon poop. They would do anything and everything to get food. And now we're at this point in history, Doug, on the 19th of January, where the food is disappearing from the shelves. You were at Branson when I made the statement, the word normal will never be used again.
That's it's right. In the book in the Bible that you're referencing is Lamentations.
Yep.
And it is one of the probably scariest things I think I've ever read, because it is truly – it shows you truly just how dystopian a modern society can get the moment you cancel food. The moment you take away the ability to eat, give it a couple of weeks, people will start eating themselves. Steve, my friend, we're almost out of time. We have about a minute left. If you can go ahead and share with people where they can get your books, where they can get some of the great information that you're putting out in your movies, and what is it that you have on the agenda next. Please let us know right before we run out of time.
Well, first of all, the best place to get the most current, up-to-date, in-depth reports are what I call my private briefings. They're put out twice a week by subscription only, and it's, you can go to gensix.com and look up private briefings. The other thing I want people to do is go look on my website, Steve Quayle, Quayle.com, and see the Mega Drought movie, because a Mega Drought movie has more to do with than just water, Doug. I expanded this tremendously. People are claiming this is the best thing they've ever seen. I'm not bragging, but I'm just saying, this is the sixth video, and I'm on record saying it's my final video. So the annihilation of the human race accelerates. Catastrophes, water wars, nuclear war are about to ignite the greatest migration of humanity in Earth's history. I don't believe anybody's done a more contemporary, up-to-the-moment video production than that. That was just released a couple months ago. So the Gen 6 website is for the private briefing, where people can also order the downloads of all the conferences we've done in Branson, either in person, Branson, Missouri, or virtual conferences. And the last one with the speakers roster was phenomenal. It was called the Extinction Protocols. And I want people to understand something. The entire push to control the food is to kill the maximum amount of people. The entire push to get everybody vaccinated is to kill the maximum amount of people. And we know from the Deagle Report, by 2025, they're forecasting a 250 million human beings, but American lives will be gone. And they're going to see that they, I guess you'd say, finish off this part of the human race as fast as they can. And that's what's taking place, in my opinion.
All right, Steve, and right there, we're going to have to stop. What a great interview and just a tremendous amount of information. Everyone, please check out all the great things Steve Quayle is doing. I'm Doug Thornton. This is American Vindicta, signing off. Thank you for listening.
All stations, all call signs. Prepare for transmission. This is Wrecker Actual. Dearly beloved, avenge not yourselves, but rather give place unto wrath. For it is written, vengeance is mine, I will repay, saith the Lord. End of transmission.